1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again, Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. The podcast is always jammed full on a Monday, and today is no different. A full, bursting to the seams podcast. Thanks for coming back once again. Tough weekend for the M's. They dropped 2 of 3 to Tampa Bay. A series actually started on Thursday, so they lost 3 of 4 to Tampa over the weekend. We'll talk about the three games that happened over the weekend. We'll touch on those quickly. Also, the Major League Baseball draft starts today. Shannon Dreher caught up with Tom McNamara. Get a quick preview there. We'll have more draft discussion as we move through this week's of podcast. I am a huge fan of the draft, so we'll have you covered here on the podcast. Bullpen Banter is back, and he didn't waste any time. Charlie Furbush got to Mike Montgomery right away, so that comes up as well, which is always outstanding. The week that was, it's on its way. And we have a couple of pieces from Tampa Bay players from over the weekend that I think are pretty great. One of them from Steven Souza, who's a local product. In his first full year at the big league level, born in Everett, went to Cascade High at Everett. So Eric Goldschmidt had a great conversation with him, of course, about coming back to Seattle, which is outstanding. But he made an incredible catch last year to seal a Jeff Zimmerman no-hitter. It's a remarkable catch, and it's fascinating to hear him talk about it. And what was it's one of those mind-boggling catches if you ever see it. So that comes up as well. Also, Chris Archer, who pitched yesterday. Aaron Goldschmidt talked to Chris Archer, Tampa Bay pitcher, and I thought it was outstanding. He's a real thoughtful guy. He reads a ton. And he talks about Satchel Paige a little bit, which I think is great guy to talk about. You know, I love Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. It's one of my favorite days of the year. I am so happy we celebrate his legacy the way that we do. At the same time, I feel like some other guys, some other pioneers don't get their due. Larry Doba is one of them, who played with the Cleveland Indians for a long time. And Satchel Paige, I think, is another who I think everyone is aware of Satchel Paige, knows of Satchel Paige, but I don't think everyone knows the full Satchel Paige backstory. And Chris Archer is going to talk a little bit about Satchel Paige, which I think is pretty great. So I included that in this podcast as well. So a couple of Tampa Bay players at the end. So as you can imagine, this one is full. And, of course, the Mariners have an off day today, so we're not going to talk about the series coming up until tomorrow. And it's going to be another full podcast tomorrow as well as the Mariners hit the road and they take on the Cleveland Indians. And we'll talk about that coming up. But first things first, let's get into this weekend a little bit. The starting pitching was outstanding all weekend long. In fact, I mean, you go back for a while, it's been really good. And no exception on Friday, Jay Happ was outstanding once again for the M's.
And the 1-2 on the way to Cabrera. Swing and a miss and a fastball. Strike three. Big, big strikeout for Jay Happ, his fourth of the night. And the Rays have two outs here in the top of the fifth inning. He needed the punch out, and he got it.
Unfortunately for the M's, they just could not get much going offensively in the ballgame at all. Jay Happ was excellent in the rotation for the M's. Tampa Bay scoreless as well. This was a 0-0 ball game going to the ninth inning. Happ gives you 7 scoreless. Carson Smith came on for the eighth, pitched a scoreless inning. Odorizzi got the start for Tampa Bay. He left with an oblique injury, and then Tampa Bay goes to the bullpen, and it's zeros until the ninth. Fernando Rodney gives up a solo home run, and then it got pretty painful after this for the M's.
And the 1-2 pitch. Jackson a swing and a drive into the gap in the right center field. On the run, Souza dives, can't get to it. Gets on by Souza and the center fielder Kiermaier. Jackson running second, heading for three. The throw cut off, relay to third. Not in time. Austin Jackson, a leadoff triple here in the bottom of the ninth inning.
But he gets stranded at third, and the Mariners lose on Friday, so they lose game 1, 2-1. They lose game 2-1-0 in a series where pitching ruled. There were 11 runs scored total between the two teams in the four-game series. It was all about pitching, close, tight ball games throughout. But the Mariners lose on Friday 1-0, a tough one. On Saturday, though, when they really needed a victory, they turned to the king, Felix Hernandez, and he delivered.
Felix takes the sign, and here comes the 0-2. Strike three called. He gets him with a fastball right down the middle. And with that, the king has sat down 11 in a row, and he picks up strikeout number 6.
He was on his game once again. Felix Hernandez, ho-hum, 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. He just continues. It seems like it is nearly automatic every time he goes to the mound, and he just churns out another Felix quality start. You look at it, and it's remarkable. So Felix, 7th game already this year of 7-plus innings while allowing 1 earned run or fewer. 7 games already. That leads the American League, and it's more than the entire Chicago White Sox pitching staff. Their rotation, they've only done it 6 times total. Impressive number. But again, the King was fantastic, but it was a tight ball game. It was tied 1-1. Tampa Bay actually broke through against Felix, scoring for the first time against him in a long time. He has really had Tampa Bay's number. But Austin Jackson, he crushed a ball to give the Mariners the lead.
Full count to Jackson. Here's the next off-rate swinger. This is hammered deep to left field and a home run. This is blasted out of here. It's over the bullpen. A full count slam there by Austin Jackson. And the Mariners have taken the lead. And Felix is on the plus side. That was a no-doubter by Austin Jackson. It's 2-1 Mariners.
I don't think he can hit a ball any farther than he did. Absolutely destroyed. 2-1. And then things developing in the 8th inning. Mark Lowe comes out for the 8th, and he pitched very well. He goes an inning, gives up 1 hit, strikes out 1. His ERA sitting at 0.57. And then Carson Smith gets the call, and that was the indication. With Lowe coming out in the 8th, Carson Smith gets the call in the 9th, looking for his first career save.
Carson ready from the stretch. And the 0-2 pitch, swing and a fly ball into left field. Ackley comes up. This should do it. He makes the catch and the ball game is over. The Mariners snap the 7-game losing streak. And Carson Smith picks up his first major league save and hands Felix Hernandez the king his 9th win of the year. The Mariners win it 2-1 over the Tampa Bay Rays. And the losing streak is over.
So they snapped the 7-game losing streak at that point. Carson Smith after the game.
It was much different than the minor leagues when I did it. Coming out of the gates, it was a little different feeling. Crowd was a little louder. It was fun to be a part of. Oh yeah, definitely a little louder. So it was fun.
At what point did it feel like a normal outing?
Once I got the first guy out, I settled down a little bit. I mean, that's always true. I mean, when you get the first guy out, the inning's a lot easier to navigate through. So I can't say it felt normal at any point, but for the most part, I tried to treat it the same.
And Lloyd McClendon talked about it with Rick Riz, that he had Fernando Rodney shut down for a couple days. Not only that night, he was shut down yesterday as well. He wouldn't have pitched had a save opportunity come up. So the question is moving forward, and Lloyd McClendon wouldn't really indicate one way or another which way he will go now. We do know that they're working with Fernando Rodney on the side, working on some mechanical issues. He was shut down for a couple of days, so it's going to be interesting after the off day today what will happen in the Cleveland series. So watch the back end of the bullpen closely. But Carson Smith, his first career save, so congratulations to Carson Smith. So just as Tampa Bay wanted nothing to do with Felix Hernandez, who won his 9th game of the season already, Mariners really at this point want nothing to do with Chris Archer. Archer has been as dominant as you can possibly be as a starting pitcher, especially as of late. And he was outstanding against the Mariners yesterday. 7 innings, 6 hits, 1 run. It was not earned. No walks and 11 strikeouts. Although Mike Montgomery pitched pretty well for the M's in this one. He went toe-to-toe, went seven innings, gave up just two earned runs, five hits along the way, one walk, and three strikeouts. Mariners trailing after Tampa scored one in the first, a solo home run in the seventh, trailing 2-0. They did get one back in the seventh inning.
And the right-hander's 1-2, swinging a slicer the opposite way, drops in there for a base hit. Here comes Cruz. He's into third, being waved around. Cruz gallops to the plate. He scores standing. Brad Miller with two outs and two strikes against him keeps the rally alive for the Mariners. The Mariners on the board for the first time today. It's 2-1 Tampa Bay.
But when it's all said and done, it was too much Archer, too much Tampa Bay Rays, and Tampa grabs a 3-1 victory. Archer, get this, in his last five starts, a 0.79 ERA, 34 and a third innings. He's given up 24 hits. He has struck out 50 in 34 and a third innings. He's walked five. He's given up three earned runs in that time stretch. A club record. He ties a club record. He's given up one run or fewer in five straight starts. In seven straight road starts, one run or fewer. He's been unbelievable. His slider is one of the best pitches in the game. I mean, if you have a discussion about best pitches in Major League Baseball right now, the Felix changeup obviously is on that list. Chris Archer's slider is in that discussion, and he goes to it a lot. At the beginning of this month, only Tyson Ross from the Padres had thrown more sliders than Archer. Yesterday against the Mariners, he threw it 54 times, which is incredible. But there's a reason he goes to it, because it's nearly unhittable. And he dominates right-handed hitters in particular. It's a devastating pitch, and he is using it incredibly effectively. Chris Archer, one of the best going in Major League Baseball right now. Mike Montgomery was outstanding, though. Give him credit. He gave his team a chance, which is what you need against an ace. You got to have your starter go toe-to-toe, and he did. Montgomery threw two starts with the M's now, 13 innings, three earned runs, seven strikeouts during that time frame. So that's impressive stuff. Not enough, though, to get the win as the Rays take the ball game. So now it's on to Cleveland after what was a really difficult homestand for the M's, 2-9 during the homestand. Time to wipe that away and start fresh on the road after an off day today. And we'll preview those matchups coming up. I'll give you this. They're not going to get much easier, especially the first couple games, because Kluber and Bauer are on the horizon. Second time this year they've had to go back-to-back with Archer and Kluber. And just off the top of my head, if you were to back up two pitchers, you know, one after another, the list is pretty short in terms of combos you would rather see than Kluber and Archer back-to-back. I mean, you're talking about the best of the best at that point. And the Mariners now have had to do it twice in the last couple of weeks. So, again, we'll talk about that more coming up. But right now, speaking of Mike Montgomery, let's turn it over to Charlie Furbush. It is bullpen banter time with his special guest, Mike Montgomery.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Bullpen Banter. We're back here. Lovely, beautiful day in Seattle. And today, I am Charlie Furbush, as always, today. Today, my special guest is the new Mariner, Mike Montgomery. Mike, it's a pleasure to have you on the show here. How are you? What's going on today? How you doing?
Doing good. Just excited to be here with you, man. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is going to be a pretty mind-blowing experience. We'll start light and easy. You know, where, you know, as a fellow Southpaw that you are, like I am, we are inherently connected. Where'd you grow up, man?
First of all, yes, I've heard that this is quite the mind-blowing experience. I am from Valencia, California, Santa Clarita Valley. Grew up there and had family on the East Coast and kind of went back and forth and visited, but Southern California.
Nice, man. Were you a beach goer? Did you do some surfing when you grew up at all?
I was more of a lake guy.
I'm a lake guy myself.
You know, I did like the beach more of boating, you know, wakeboarding and skiing and that kind of stuff.
All right, nice. Yeah, I obviously grew up in Maine, if you didn't know that. Now you know that. Do you actually have a chance to pitch against your former team today? It's a pretty cool experience. You actually came up with a different organization, has been traded now twice, and now you're here. So it's quite a trek to get to the big leagues, but you did it. Tell me where you got drafted by and how the trades went down.
got drafted by Kansas City in 2008. You know, I decided to sign right away and kind of moved up quickly with them, and then kind of had ups and downs at the AAA level. They got traded to Tampa and kept kind of working, shaping everything the way, you know, I wanted. And it's a really good experience facing them. And I know a lot of those guys. They're a lot of fun over there.
Yeah, they have no chance. I mean, I already know that.
Well, you know, they got a lot of good players. So I'm really excited just to have this opportunity, to be honest. It's been a long journey so far, and it's fun being here.
Yeah, well, it's only going to get better, man. I can tell you that once you get to know everyone. Did you have any other sport that you played growing up besides baseball? You must have been a stud athlete, you know?
I played basketball, baseball. I always wanted to play everything. Football, hockey, my parents were like, nope, you're not doing it. You're playing basketball and baseball. So I kind of got into those and really was into basketball a lot, and my parents both played basketball and softball, basketball, baseball, and
nice
coached as well. And my, you know,
can you dunk
up,
it, dude?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Did you have a favorite? I guess growing up in Southern California, you got two teams to choose from down there. Do you have a favorite team or a favorite player that you looked up to? I mean, I grew up a Red Sox fan, so I was all about Mo Vaughn back in the day.
Okay.
You know,
if it's baseball, I grew up a Braves fan.
Okay,
and my dad's family's from Atlanta, so, you know, we'd go out there. It was on TBS all the time. You know, I liked the Dodgers and Angels too, but it was really the Braves. But I was a big Lakers fan back with Kobe and Shaq back in the heyday, and you know, a lot of fun watching them.
So who you got in the series right now, the Warriors, Cavs?
I got to go Warriors.
Yeah, I think I'm going Warriors too.
Steph Curry's tough to play against. It's
so fun to watch.
Yeah.
What was the first car you ever bought?
The car when I signed, it's a GMC Sierra.
Nice. And did you have a car previously, the first car you ever had in high school?
The first car before was a lot more interesting. It was a 1993 Isuzu Amigo drop top.
Oh, and, a little nice.
Oh, yeah. And it was Hawaiian seats in the back, and we used to just have everyone jump everybody in there and cruise around, stick shift and everything.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
That's keeping it real.
Yeah, it was a very fun vehicle.
Yeah, I can imagine. I absolutely wish I had a car that was as cool as that. I've actually looked at even like a – you ever seen like a K5 Blazer? The old Chevys?
I remember those.
Yeah, and you take the top off so it's like a convertible truck.
Yes.
It looks, it'd be cool. I think I'd look pretty good in it. What do you have for your mom's or your dad's favorite home-cooked meal?
I'm going to have to go spaghetti with my mom's spaghetti. I mean, that's
tough to beat.
It really is tough to beat, and she makes a lot of good things. But
what are the sides?
Some garlic bread and salad.
Balls, no meatballs.
I like the meat sauce.
Meat sauce.
Okay. You know, the meatballs. Yeah, I don't really need them. Just give me the meat sauce, and I'm fine.
Yeah, you're good, and you can just crush it. That's awesome. And I like to one more question before we get into the best part of the show. If you could have one actor in Hollywood play you, like, in a role about your life, who would it be? Do you have a celebrity lookalike?
I don't know. I mean,
I could see, like, a Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, you know, I definitely kind of resemble him, you know, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely. So,
I mean, he's great. Yeah. The old Days of the Confused, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right, we'll just put Matthew McConaughey. I mean, who doesn't like him?
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, one of the best.
One of the best, absolutely. Thanks for coming on the show, Mike.
Yeah, it was a good first experience. Quite the show you got here.
Absolutely. That's amazing. We'll see you next week.
So Mike Montgomery with Charlie Frobisch, Bullpen Banter. The draft starts today. The Mariners picking 60th. We'll have more draft coverage as we move through the week. But right now, we'll give it over to Shannon Dreyer and Tom McNamara. A little draft preview taking you inside what the Mariners are preparing for today.
All right, Tom, first of all, good to see you. We don't see you very much at all the first half of the season. You were out getting ready for the draft, which, of course, starts on Monday. The first thing I want to ask is, how different? You guys are picking so late this year. Does that change what you do leading up to? I mean, not just this week, but for the whole year. How do you approach a later pick? Does that eliminate some things for you, or does that make it more difficult?
It eliminates multiple looks. I've thought about this question a lot. You don't have the luxury to see a player five or six times during the spring because you're wasting days if you do that. We've seen more players this year than we ever have because of where we're picking. So I think seeing as many players, we've created depth for ourselves to be in good position to take the right player when we pick.
So since you're seeing more, is that because you're not as focused on a prized few at the top? If you had a top 20 pick?
Yeah, well, we tried to see the top guys early in the year, and then halfway through the season, we would match up a lot of the top guys against the lesser guys. So we're going back seeing a first-round pick against maybe a third or fourth-round pick. So you're kind of, you know, you're seeing a first-rounder that you probably don't think will be there, but he might be pitching against a third-round pick. So you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. But our goal was to see the top 100 players, and we've definitely done that. We've gone past 100. We've been out seeing as many players as possible. You know, the group of guys that, you know, work with me have been getting after it, and we're pretty excited. A lot of people think, wow, you guys are picking 60, you're in no man's land. I was telling the guys before, in 2010, we took Taiwan 43 in the country, and there were only two guys left on our 1 through 30 board, and we just followed our board, and we took the best guy. And at the time, he was the only guy on our 1 through 30 board, and we just took him.
If we were to see your board right now, is there any one area that you're concentrated on right now?
Taking the best player, taking the best pitcher. I know that sounds boring. We've seen a lot of pitching, and we don't want to walk away from a position player that can become an all-star. We would like to take pitching, but I keep telling our guys, we're going to take the best guy, whether it's a pitcher or position player.
So tell us a little bit about Monday, what that's going to look like. It looks like a little bit of a longer day since you've got two picks, I believe, on the first day.
Yes.
You know, start to finish. What happens that day?
We firm up things as we get closer, phone calls, last-second injury checks, and just continue to go over the prep order of players. Make sure we got those top, basically 61 players, right where we want them to be. And every once in a while, there's a couple of magnet shuffles right towards the end. All of a sudden, you just stare at that board and you say, hey, you know what? Let's move this guy over that guy. It just makes more sense. We like him better. Move him up. Move the other guy down.
What do you look forward to the most on Monday?
The excitement of once you select the player. That's always the best time of the year. You're in a room with all the guys that you've been working with all year round, 25 guys together. Every year, it never gets old. It's like Christmas morning, you know. All of a sudden, you unwrap those gifts, and, you know, we're hoping that we select a player that could make a big impact on the organization. That's the goal.
Well, we are looking forward to seeing what happens. There's a lot of intrigue in those couple of days and so much work that goes into it. It's great to see you here, Tom.
Thanks, Shannon. I appreciate it.
The draft, always a great time of year. And we'll run down the Mariners draft picks, obviously, and always local products going in the draft as well. And speaking of that, Steven Souza was taken in the third round of the draft in 2007. He played his high school baseball at Cascade in Everett. He's broken through to the big leagues, did it last year with Washington, and now a full-time player with Tampa Bay. And he had great things to say, returning home and also making an incredible catch to save a no-hitter for Jeff Zimmerman and the Nationals a year ago. Here's Aaron Goldsmith with Tampa outfielder Steven Souza.
Well, Steven, welcome back to town. Born in Everett, you went to Cascade High School. So the first question is, what is the pass list looking like for this series for you?
Tonight's going to be a little insane. There'll probably be about 30 or more out there. And so it's been a fun moment to have here with my family and spend it, and just the history that has been here that I watched as a kid growing up was pretty cool.
And were you able to get to many Mariners games growing up?
Yeah, I was. We got to a ton. We had, I think, like a package where we went to a third of the games in the kingdom. And then when they transferred over here, you had to renew everything. So we didn't get season tickets, but we were able to come to a ton of games growing up. We watched a ton of games while they won 115 games and went to the playoffs when the Yankees played. So I've been watching this team and playing and coming to watch them play since I was a young kid.
Your career is a pretty fun one to go back and look on. Drafted out of high school, 8 years in the minors before last season making your debut in April against Atlanta. What was that journey like for you through the minor leagues?
it was tough. There was a lot of bumps and bruises, a lot of learning, a lot of failing, and having to dig deep and find myself, and got messed up along the way, took some bad road, but God really took me to a place where I matured and was able to see the game as it was and have fun. And so at the latter part of my career, I started to just play the game and have fun, and it was a long journey, but to step on that field in Atlanta was man, I can't even explain it.
Aside from clearly your faith, was there someone that really helped you along the way to get things turned around in the right direction?
Yeah, I think there's a couple people. Doug Harris, the farm director for the Nationals, had a huge part of my career of getting it turned around. There was special hitting coaches that had that part turned around, but maturity-wise, Brent Lillibridge from this area, he was one of my best friends while he was playing. We worked out every day together, and he really helped me mature as a man and learn how to play the game the right way and carry yourself as a man off the field the right way.
So we have to talk about the catch.
All on their feet, all around Nationals Park, the 2-1 pitch, line to left center field. Souza moving over. Can he get there? He makes a diving catch! He makes a diving catch! He holds on! It's a no-hitter! It's a no-hitter for Jordan Zimmermann! What a play by Souza to end the game and clinch a no-hitter for Zimmermann! And it's a mob scene up the third baseline!
If you go back to last year, game 162, you were brought in as a defensive replacement in the ninth inning, and it could not have been better timing for you. You helped to preserve the Jordan Zimmermann no-hitter. Take us back. What was that moment like?
Insane. You know, it was the last game of the year, so you don't really expect anything like that to happen. And I don't think we even realized what was happening because we were subbing guys in and out early on in the game because we were headed to playoffs trying to get guys ABs. And so I was somewhat checked out early, and as the game went on, we started to realize that something was going on here, and Jordan had something going. And so I started to get ready because Zim had a bum hammy in left field. And so as the game got later and later, I started to get more and more ready. And I was in the back doing hand-eye drills and stuff. And so, you know, stuff that you never do. And so it was a pretty crazy moment and a hectic moment. And all I'm thinking is if I drop this ball, I'm going to get booed out of D.C., so I'm preparing for anything. So I sprinted out to left field and just awaiting the next pitch. And we got to two out so quick, and I was waiting, and nothing had really crazy had happened yet. And there's always something that happens in a no-hitter or a perfect game where someone has to make a play, and I just thought, man, something's going to happen. So I want to be ready for anything, and the ball was hit. And as soon as it was hit, I thought, no chance. I can't get to this. And as I closed in, I thought, I have a chance to dive for this. And I dove at a weird angle, and I dove backwards. And so I had to hold the ball in, and when I landed and heard 44,000, it was a bone-chilling experience to hear those people scream and to save that no-hitter for him, something I'll never forget.
Now, what were Zimmermann's words to you when he first saw you?
You're the man. That's what I said. He said, you're the man. I can't thank you enough. And it really, actually, that play, I mean, we were on the bench all together throughout the season, because he's a starting pitcher. But that play really brought us together, and he's a close friend that I'll never forget.
Now, your career has a long way to go from here, but that's the type of moment that makes a career. I mean, have you allowed yourself to think about that?
Yeah, and a lot of people asked me this offseason about it, and one thing that I reiterated was I didn't want to be known just for that play. I didn't want to be known for a guy that just came up, made that play, and then no one ever heard. So I was super excited and humbled to make that play, but you know, I wanted to be known for other things apart from my game other than just that catch.
Well, you're off to a great start with your new employer in the Tampa Bay Rays. Steven, welcome back home. Thank you so much for the time. It's been a real treat.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's really an honor.
And as we continue the Tampa Bay theme, I guess, Chris Archer was outstanding yesterday, one of the best in the biz right now, but not only on the field, on the mic as well. Here's Aaron Goldsmith with the Tampa Bay Ace.
Chris, your story is an interesting one when you take a look at your pathway to get to where you are today. You spent 8 years in the minor leagues with eight different teams, with three different franchises. Your journey began when you were 17 and ended when you were 24 when you got called up to the big leagues. How did you change the most, whether it was as a person or as a player, during that journey through minor league baseball?
I think you mature in every possible way. You go from being a child with financially nothing,
yeah,
to a young adult with more experience than most grandparents, mm-hmm, as far as worldly, mm-hmm, you know, more experience than grandparents, and financially you're a lot more stable because you're not making $1,100 per month anymore. Granted, I got a decent signing bonus, but from 06 to 2014, it's just life's completely different. And yeah, I mean, you also mature as a pitcher, and I feel fortunate that all those things happened, that I played for so many different teams, because who knows what would have happened if I would have stayed with Cleveland. I led the league in walks. I had a 4.29 ERA. I didn't really do anything special except for whatever the one scout that was in the stands that liked me saw. It might have just been like he was there for one game and I had a decent outing where I only walked 3 instead of 5. And he said, you know, we'll take a chance. Because back then, you have a 75 pitch count. Yeah. Like, the organization's philosophy was, if you're an A-ball and you're a high school draftee, you're going to throw 75 pitches. We don't care if it's April. We don't care if it's August. You're throwing 75 pitches. And at 18 years old, whenever I was in low A, it's hard to develop that way. Because you still are under the mindset of, I have to throw hard. I have to throw the nastiest curveball because I'm programmed to throw for the scouts and not to compete. Because ever since I was 16, I had been working for a college scholarship or to get drafted. The way you do that is you throw hard and you show that you have a nasty off-speed pitch. No matter if you're a little wild, who cares? They're going to swing at it in high school. But, yeah, so physically, mentally, emotionally, I mean, I'm a totally different person than I was when I was 17, whenever I first got drafted.
A couple of weeks ago when we were chatting in St. Pete, you were reading Satchel Paige's autobiography, which has a great title, by the way, Maybe I'll Pitch Forever.
Yep, that's it.
What did you learn about Satchel Paige that you liked the most?
Confidence, mentality. I learned how hard it was for people that look like me, race-wise, ethnicity-wise, to be successful in baseball. And perseverance, man. He was 42-year-old rookie of the year. 17, 18 years in the Negro Leagues and semi-pro baseball, barnstorm teams. He knew he was ready, but he wasn't the right guy. Jackie Robinson was the right guy to take the initial abuse. I mean, he still got abused verbally and physically, but they didn't think he was the right guy, so he had to wait and wait and wait. And he just talked about how many people were blessed beyond MLB, the MLB players at the time that were in the Negro Leagues that never got a shot. And they overdosed on drugs and alcohol because they were so depressed because they couldn't live and fulfill their dreams. And I can. So it makes me grateful. And just knowing what he accomplished and how he accomplished it makes me never want to settle. Regardless if you're coming off the worst game of your career or the best game of your career, the same amount of work needs to be put in mentally and physically.
Chris, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And finally, we're going to end things as we always do on a Monday. It's time for the week that was.
This is the week that was.
A look back on highlights and events of the Mariners' past week
on Mariners Magazine.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss for strike 3, a 95-mile-an-hour punch out there from Michael Guaype in his big league debut, and that is his first major league strikeout. The 3-2, check swing, appeal to first base, and he doesn't go around. Rodriguez draws a walk. And here comes Lloyd McClendon, and the fuse might be short.
Oh, there he goes.
He just got tossed. Lloyd is in a dead sprint out to first base, and he's got words with Will Little. Lloyd and Zunino both got ejected within a span of less than 15 seconds. Lloyd has thrown his hat again. He kicks the hat. He gives it the boot with the right foot, and Lloyd is stomping to home like he's trying to put out a fire. And he's wagging his finger right to the face of Mike DeMuro. Lloyd's looking for something else to toss.
Montgomery turns and tosses. Big swing and a miss. Gets him with the curveball. And Mike Montgomery strikes out Carlos Beltran. A 1-2-3 top of the sixth. And if that's all she wrote for Mike Montgomery, he exits to a standing ovation here inside Safeco Field. One run over six innings. And Mike Montgomery's Major League debut against the New York Yankees.
A lot of emotions and really, you know, understanding that, you know, it's a big day for friends and family and for me. And but, you know, I'm here to do a job, and that's to pitch and to get outs. And I really, you know, tried to stay in that mindset and just you know, stay focused on what I needed to do.
The pitch swung on. Ground ball, two-hopper near the bag at third. Up with the ball is Seager. Toss across in time to get Guyer, and that's it for the Rays. And a 1-2-3 top of the eighth inning. Roenis Elias has pitched very well tonight.
We've made a trade. It's a six-player trade. The Seattle Mariners getting Mark Trumbo from the Arizona Diamondbacks and Vidal Nuno, a left-handed pitcher.
The windup and the pitch, swinging a ground ball to Lola, short and through. Diving to his left, Longoria. Diving to his right, Cabrera. And Trumbo threads the needle on the left side of the infield. A leadoff single for Mark Trumbo in his Mariner debut. Yes, indeed, big fella. Welcome to Seattle. And the 1-2 on the way to Cabrera. Swing and a miss and a fastball, strike three. Big, big strikeout for Jay Happ, his fourth of the night. Felix takes the sign, and here comes the 0-2. Strike three called. He gets him with a fastball right down the middle. And with that, the King has sat down 11 in a row, and he picks up strikeout number six.
That's my job. I mean, you know, I'm Dave, so Dave will live on me. So I just try to go out there and have the best game that I can do.
Full count to Jackson. Here's the next off-rate swinger. This is hammered deep to left field and a home run. This is blasted out of here. It's over the bullpen. A full count slam there by Austin Jackson. And the Mariners have taken the lead. And Felix is on the plus side. That was a no-doubter by Austin Jackson. It's 2-1 Mariners. Carson ready from the stretch. And the 0-2 pitch, swing and a fly ball into left field. Ackley comes up. This should do it. He makes the catch and the ball game is over. The Mariners snap the 7-game losing streak. And Carson Smith picks up his first Major League save and hands Felix Hernandez the King his 9th win of the year. The Mariners win it 2-1 over the Tampa Bay Rays.
See you later.